Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Tom, who is here to speak with us about his experience of participating in the recent group coaching on parenting. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks, Jim. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you saw as you participated with fellow Sangha in practicing around the topic of parenting.
Oh, sure. I saw so many things. The practice that we do applied to parenting just opened up so many things. Because, you know, sometimes, I don't know if this is a common experience, I suspect it is, that parenting can be a very lonely thing sometimes where there isn't a lot of other parents to talk to. So having a forum for parents to come together and share how we do it, what we see, how we respond to prompts from the practice was very, very helpful.
Oh, gosh. And even just right off the bat, as you say that, Tom, what I just see is how invaluable it is to be able to talk about what's really going on for us, right? So not to get on social media and, you know, put our pictures of how happy we all are and how well it's all going. And so to get to really talk with folks about what they're seeing and get to apply practice to that directly.
That's right. We didn't just have, you know, talking about our vacations on sunny beaches or anything like that.
Exactly.
There was some real things, you know, and one of the ones that struck me the most that we did was talking about being there for the bad parent, you know, where it's a common experience to have those things where I was a real bad parent in that situation. So we had a guided imagery to bring that up, experience those emotions in a safe place, and be able to process it in a way that is so wonderful in this practice for me, because having an experience like that can color so much about parenting. And it's so devastating sometimes. You know, I just don't want to look at it. I don't even want to think about it. But being encouraged to go through a guided imagery in a safe environment to get deeper into what that experience meant and what's the truth. You know, we talk about this all the time. Ego will tell you it's lies, but then we have to discern the truth from an authentic place. And so that was one of my favorite exercises that we did.
Well, and again, what a good point, because as you say, so maybe I do something that just, oh, it makes me cringe, right? And self-hate is just, oh, that's perfect, right? Rubbing its little imaginary hands together. And then there's this sense of, oh, I don't want to look at that. I can't deal with that. It's too awful. But as you say, that doesn't mean it's not having an impact on me. You said it colors everything, right? So even if I'm not looking directly at it, it's having a huge impact on me, on my well-being, very likely my relationship with my child, all those things. So getting to have a place where you can actually turn right towards that experience and look at what's authentically so, as you say, what a gift.
Yes, yes. And it's a way of, you know, having what is so meaningful in that experience be experienced from the perspective of the mentor or from the perspective of the bad parent with the mentor there, that transforms the whole thing and really exposes a lot of ideas about how did we decide that this was a bad parenting moment? How did we decide that this is something to be avoided?
Yes, yes, yeah. Because I would guess what, like any content area of practice, what we find out is this is a human being who's struggling, who's suffering,
yes,
right? And doing the best they can. Yeah.
That's right. And it really gets to also, you know, the basis of all these beliefs and assumptions about how I'm supposed to be as a parent, right. Which is, I mean, there's so much karma around that. I mean, generations of it, and then the way that I was raised, the way that my siblings were raised, the way that everything was in my home, you know, colors how things are in my experience of being a parent. And just the freedom to explore that in what I keep saying is so meaningful to me is the safe environment of having the mentor there, being encouraged to bring the mentor along with you in those situations and those explorations, and then a steward who's there to walk you through the process in a real gentle way and encourage people to participate. Those were the parts that really were special.
Yeah. Gosh, that's so true. So you're really describing the privileged environment, aren't you? Where instead of living with self-hate, we're living with compassion. We're living in that mentoring presence, which is there for us as we want to be there for our children.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So having a privileged, an example of a privileged environment like this, you know, I can bring that privileged environment into a few different places that are transformational that aren't so obvious to me. Like, I can make that privileged environment for myself, where I can feel free to explore parenting and what it means to me, and what it means to me to be a parent, and what kind of support do I need as a parent. You know, a lot of the time, the way society tells us to be as parents is to everything for the child, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know, where it's all about the child. And what we were encouraged to do in this class was to look at ourselves. You know, a parent needs support just like a child needs support. And so we were able to discuss that as a group as well, which was very enlightening.
Oh, it really is, because we're so set up without that, aren't we? I mean, how in the world are we going to take the kind of care we want to take about these small folks that we care about so much if I'm not being taken care of? There's no way I'm going to be able to take care of my children in the way that I want to if I'm not being cared for. And so to really get to look at that, to realize how that's never going to work, and then to start to, I would imagine, notice when that's happening, when I'm not being taken care of, and to be able to take the steps that I need in order to take care of myself so that I am available to my kids and in the best way I want to be available to them.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, there's so little support that we get for supporting ourselves. You know, it's not something that's normally done. But then as parents, I think it's done even less, because it's supposed to be, you know, you're supposed to give your life for this child, which is great, and something that, you know, these children need to be safeguarded, but we need to come from that place of abundance of safeguarding, and this abundance of safety, this abundance of love and caring, instead of just assuming that, oh, I'm an adult, I can handle it.
Exactly. Just, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. And you're so right. So now you have kids. Okay, well, that's over. You're the grown-up now. And
that's
you just crossed some imaginary line where you no longer have needs. And it's all about the kids. And as if that's going to serve them.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And absolutely won't.
Yeah, you're so right. And one of the ways that was made so clear, you know, we use a lot of excerpts from the Time Out for Parents book. And one of my favorite things in there was put on your own oxygen mask first.
Right.
And that just made it crystal clear, you know, what the practice way of addressing these issues is, where I can't be of any help or love or support or compassion for anyone else if I don't experience that for myself. So it was really, really great. We had a few sessions on that particular phrase where we did guided imageries and discussion and really broke it apart, what each person's experience was. And it was really, really illuminating.
As you say, it's just so helpful to be able to apply practice to a very concrete area of our lives. And as Sherry will often say, kids, health, money, those are the really, really real things, right? So
yes.
For a lot of us, those are the places where, okay, I mean, yeah, you can do awareness practice, you can go on retreat, you know, you can have your meditation time. But when it comes to things like your kids, you have to turn to conditioned mind because the stakes are high. And so you can't possibly just come to the present moment. And of course, it's the opposite, right?
Yes.
I mean, those are the places where we know the stakes are high, so we do want to have support to get here, to be in the moment and look to see instead of looking to condition mind.
Yes, exactly. And one of the things I wanted to touch on to make sure to put out there is that another one of my favorite things about it was that all the language was inclusive of all kinds of experiences. You know, it was not a heteronormative kind of an experience or using words like that to exclude people from the participating. That was one great thing of the privileged environment that was there, was that it was all inclusive, all open to any kinds of experiences that are out there. So if someone is thinking about doing it and maybe in a situation where they might not feel safe, I would encourage them to try it, because that privileged environment is real, and it makes it open to so many great experiences.
Well, and you make another excellent point, Tom, because, of course, offering on parenting would be applicable to every single one of us.
That
whether
is true as
actually,
well.
Actually, right, had our own biological children or not. Those principles are going to be absolutely applicable to every single one of us. Yeah.
You're right. I was thinking about bringing that up, but I wasn't sure. I wanted to keep it our little secret for just us parents to get the support we needed. But you're so right.
We can add more sessions if we need to. Yeah.
That's right. We've all been raised by someone. We've all had those experiences, and we take them into our lives, no matter how old we are. And it's totally applicable. I mean, there isn't a person in the world who's caring for somebody who doesn't need to learn, put your own mask on first.
That's right. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Well, Tom, thank you again so much for being with us this afternoon to tell us about your experience.
You're welcome, Jen. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Take good care.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, Michael, before I turn the show over to you, can I give you a quick update on something?
Yes, please.
We promised that as things unfolded, you know, we spoke, I think it was on the October 13th open air good news update, and then you and Sherry spoke about it, about the bridge walk this year and sort of the approach that's making sense in terms of where we are and current day happenings and that sort of thing. And one of the things we said is that we would keep folks updated as things unfolded, and the next thing has just unfolded. In fact,
great.
I think it if a announcement hasn't already gone out, it's going to go out soon, later this week, but I think it's live on the website, that on that same show, October 13th, you and Sherry had a fabulous conversation about something that Sherry is doing, which I won't go into the detail. People can listen back to that link. But she's taken on a challenge for herself that she's really enjoying and using it as an opportunity to raise funds for the work in Cantalomba. And so we're doing a group coaching offering starting next Wednesday, so a week from tomorrow, inviting folks to take on any challenge that they want to take on in their lives. So we use some examples in the write-up of, you know, do you want to take up watercolors? Have you always wanted to, learn a new skill, a language? Do you want to meditate daily? Do you want to drink plenty of water? Whatever it is, this is going to be a group coaching offering inspired by Sherry's lead to take on something that we really want to do. And folks may decide to use it as a fundraiser for Africa or not. That's not a necessary part of it, but some folks are choosing to do that. But all the proceeds from this offering are going to support the work in Africa. So that's our next step. Yep.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, super fun.
Just like the Sunday workshop, all the proceeds went to Africa. So
exactly. That was our first one. This is our second. Yep. Our second support.
Yeah, and you know what dropped in as you described it is it feels in some ways like the Socratic email class, in that we bring what's important to us to the program.
Point.
So that's
a great
exciting.
Point, Michael.
That's exciting.
So the process will be the same for all of us, but the content we can each choose. That's a great point. Yeah, and this is going to be it's going to be a really big fun party. So we're doing it for 6 weeks, there's no limit to how many folks can participate with us. So we're hoping it's going to be a big party. Yeah.
Great. Great.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll turn it over to you and Ashwini. Have a great show.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks, Michael.
Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. And I'm trying to...
Talking about a party, Michael. I think there's somebody having one on the line.
Yes, and I just found an unmuted line. And so that party can continue, and we will be here doing the show.
That's good. Absolutely. That group coaching offering sounds so much fun. Because it's so many things, right, Michael, that if I have something that I want to do, I want to be supported in that, in doing that, right? It's the biggest training that we talk about. It's such a training process in practice not to listen to the voices that stop me from doing it, or, you know, resistance or procrastination, or pretty much anything that we ever talk about overcoming in this practice we're going to encounter in doing something, and to be supported while we're doing what's important to us and not supporting ego while doing that is just, an opportunity not to be missed. And then if the proceeds of that and what I'm going to do is in some way going to benefit something that I care about, it's just, as Jen said, it's a twofer, right?
Yes. Yeah, actually, when you described that, what dropped in was the conversation with Jen and Tom, that I put my own mask on first and care for this person, and then I'm available to care for others. So in the group coaching, I'm learning to care for myself, and the Africa Project will benefit as well. So that is fabulous. That is fabulous. And I have an announcement here.
Yes.
Okay. Join Sangha this Sunday, November 15th, for an exploration of the noble art of leaving things undone, a practice that can assist us in living in this here now. Registration is required by 12 noon Pacific time this Friday, November 13th.
You know, Michael, the thing I'll say about that is it's amazing the creativity of offerings we're having, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's like every month, is anyone up for doing a workshop? And there are five people who raise their hands because there's something that drops in that's exciting them about their practice and a way to offer that to the rest of Sangha. It's just amazing.
Yes, yes, and I love that phrase, the noble art of leaving things undone, which I've heard before. I can't remember the context, but it's just the perfect antidote to do more, do this, incessant ego process.
Yes, it's the focus on, it's the elimination of non-essentials, I think that's part of the quote.
Yes, elimination of non-essentials. That's
which
beautiful.
Basically would mean the voice in the head.
Right. Exactly. And so for this and other practice opportunities, please visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini, press *6 and then 1 to make guest show. And a conversation on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes long. Is great. And Ashwini, I think we're ready to go.
Wonderful.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Tria, and I'm calling from the Santa Cruz Mountains, Ben Lomond, California.
Hi, Tria.
Hi. So this is the first time I've ever called, and I have many times been talked out of calling, often talked out of even listening while it's happening, and instead I've listened to lots of archives. So I am celebrating that I didn't listen to the voices, and I called.
Well, congratulations, and good for you. We love to hear those practice successes. right? You continuously get talked out of it, and then you challenge yourself to go beyond the voices, and here you are.
Yeah. The first
so
thing
big
I'd like
welcome.
To ask, thank you. The first thing I'd like to ask Ashwini is, I was listening to an open air. It might have been the very last one that aired, and someone was talking in the Good News update about this book that you wrote about the daily recollection.
Uh-huh.
And it was so inspiring and made me want to get that book. And I looked and I couldn't find that anywhere. And I just wonder, how is it possible to get that book?
If you write into the registration office, information@livingcompassion, we'll see what we can do. It was a limited edition. We only made as many as people wanted. And so we might have a few copies for you, Tria. So just drop a line to information@livingcompassion.org, and we'll see if we can get you a copy.
Oh, that's excellent. Thank you. I love that recollection, and I've been using it with sitting, and I just think that's a wonderful idea for a book. So thank you for writing that book, and I hope I can get my hands on one.
Well, we'll do our very, very best. I think people who are listening and who can pull this off will be able to do something, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. And another thing is that I wanted to just report that I did the love letter recording. I hadn't done that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did that today. And I wanted to thank whoever created that. It was so powerful and beautiful to just remember the absolute love and affection that the mentor has for every aspect of my being, all of it. And
it's
just
so powerful.
Found it.
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, that's it.
Yes. Well, Tria, I project, right, we listen to those voices so much. And so what we hear about ourselves is not very complimentary, or there's no affection there. It's very punishing and hateful and sometimes invalidating, right? So to be able to listen, first of all, to something that feels so loving, that sees us so clearly, that knows us so intimately, it is such a wonderful, often for people doing that exercise for the first time, it's almost the first time one feels loved, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so powerful. And to know that there is something in the universe that has that attitude towards me it's an amazing experience. And then to as we practice with it, as we use it as an ongoing practice, we get to live from that place, right? We get to live with this human being from a place of love and recognize that the love that sees the human being is what we are. Because where is that coming from other than a projection of the intelligence that animates you?
Mm-hmm. I think that's what's so astounding about it, is just to remember that humongous well of love that's inside, and that it can be directed surely out towards other people, and it can be directed within towards all the people inside of me. And just to have this reassurance that it's always with me, that it never, ever, ever goes away.
Mm-hmm.
It's so just, I can't express the gratitude that I have for that opportunity, and then just all of the different practice opportunities that are available to us. And it's just amazing how we're like beckoned, you know, from deep inside, and somehow all these magical supports just show up along the way, and always the best supports seem to direct us right back inside to find that that deepest place of love.
You're pointing to my most favorite insight in practice, right, Tria, that we're not just seeking, we're being sought. And that is the experience we have when we put ourselves in a practice path, and show up, as you say, as you showing up for all of these different practices and taking advantage of it, it seems like we're guided. And we're guided to what it is that we're seeking, and we're guided by what it is that we're seeking, and then we come home to ourselves. And all of the components of that really, really bring us to our knees in gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly powerful and inexpressible, right? We can only talk about it. I mean, to talk about being the human being that's receiving the mentor's love and being the mentor, being what is animating us, giving that to the human being, it just sounds really hokey when we talk about it. You have to have the experience. Like, what it feels like, it's weird, but when we go through those movements of a two-handed recording or a love letter and watch all of those aspects of the intelligence that animates be embodied, be listened, be heard, be listened to, and be heard from and held, it's a whole experience, right? We play all the parts and we feel completely whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's beautifully stated. Thank you for stating it
that way.
Well,
thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you for calling. And now that you've crossed that first hurdle, I'm projecting we're going to hear from you a lot. Don't be a stranger.
Yes, the next time I call, I am putting it out there that I will report on what is happening through the email class that I'm taking right now. I love the email class. It's so wonderful. It's been such a long time since I've done one. I'm not on the year-long retreat, but I've been hearing a lot about that through open air. But my next call will be
Tria, I think if you watch your inbox, you're going to be in for a surprise invitation. I won't say any more. Just look in your inbox.
Okay.
All right.
I will.
Yes.
My inbox,
and we look forward to the report.
Thank you. Deep bow, Ashwini. And thank you, Michael. I love the show now and forever. And I so appreciate your warmth and your compassion and your own insights that you often share. So thank you so much for all these years of open air.
You're welcome. Thank you, Tria.
Thank you.
All right.
Tria.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Tria. And Ashwini, it's great to hear a new voice. And I appreciate your conversation with Tria and that we have this experience, and it's hard to put into words, and yet we're having this experience and we do our best with words to talk about the beauty of that experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it is profound, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
And it takes participation. It does. Tria mentioned the email class, and just the wisdom that is in every response is just it's like a giant learning opportunity, right?
Mm.
And to see our process mirrored, and for the wisdom of the guide to be offered to in all of those places, that is not just what's going on for someone else, but for me as well.
Yes, yes, the email class has been fabulous for me as well. Some big insights, so I'm very grateful, as always.
I always kid with Cherry that she's writing a book every single time. Email, right? Because it is true. The thousands and thousands of words that get written and the insights that get shared. And yeah, it's quite amazing.
Yes. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini. Hello, Michael. This is Chris in Seattle.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, would it be possible to go to the next caller? I'm still at work, and I can't actually stop and have a conversation right now.
I think we can manage that, Chris. Hang in there. Hope to hear from you soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Take care. Chris.
Okay, let's find our next caller here.
Oh.
next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, this is Bree in San Francisco.
Hi, Bree.
Hey. So I'd like to talk about awareness practice in politics. And, well, let's see. I'm trying to think about how to even put it. So I'm very happy with what happened. And I'm pretty active on Facebook and pretty good writer and participate in a lot of back and forth about the Republicans, the Democrats, Trump, Biden. And what I'm aware of, and so my comments can sometimes be critical, sarcastic, funny, and every once in a while I'll be writing something and I get this feeling of, just a bad feeling. And then that takes my awareness for, you know, a couple of seconds. And sometimes I continue with whatever I'm posting and sometimes I don't. And so, honestly, I don't have, like, a specific question, but I find this conversation in my head about it, because I do want to be involved politically. I don't know. Can you make anything of what I said?
Well, let me see if I can reflect what you're saying, Bree, and then maybe we can continue to look at it, right? So what I heard you say is, there's a way in which you care very much about what's going on in this country, I'm projecting, and that's what involvement politically means, right? So you want to participate in the process and be informed about it and contribute to it in some way.
Right.
And so you're actively doing that, and as you participate in it, you get a sense of some kind of an awareness, especially when you're posting on social media, that what you're writing may or may not be something that you want to continue to write. So you're aware of that. There's a little queasy feeling about, I might want to look at this. Right?
Right.
That's what you're, is that what you're looking at?
It is. And now, yeah, it's very helpful to hear back because I have very, very strong feelings about who I support, that, yes, I am on the, air quotes, the right side of this division we tend to have as far as politically in this country and for, as far as how the system is set up. And maybe I'm getting too heady about it, but, you know, with awareness practice, it's about maybe not taking sides or being on one side of the duality versus the other. I mean, one of the quotes that, I'm sorry, please, go ahead.
Go ahead, no, go ahead.
Well, it just always reminds me, one of the most powerful guidances I ever heard was, ego doesn't care which side of the duality you're on, it just wants your attention.
Mm-hmm. That is true, right? That whatever is compelling is where the attention will go. But I think what you said when you began this was so interesting, right? It's awareness practice in politics. And I think what you were saying in the last couple of sentences that you said is the awareness that in a practice of awareness, we're not focused on the content. There's nothing that says this is the right side and this is the wrong side and you should say this and you shouldn't say this and any of those things, right? What we do in an awareness practice is bring awareness to what's going on with me. Not necessarily what's going on out there. We're not involved in the content of it. I'm involved in the process of it. So it's illuminating for me to know why is it that I get so upset about X? What's going on for me? What kind of conditioning, what beliefs and assumptions do I have around that? Is that allowing me to be free? Is that an ego process? Does that limit me in any way? The exploration is very much... The logo for Living Compassion is transforming lives and ending suffering, but we end suffering here. And so there's a way in which we might be talking about apples and oranges because the politics is the content of the process of suffering that you're looking at in your practice. Mm-hmm. So duality is a structure of conditioning. So yeah, this is right and this is wrong. But in my practice, I'm looking at the process of conditioning. What causes that to be right and wrong? How do I suffer because I take a position? What beliefs are causing me to get angry and to act out of a place that is not loving? Right? That's what I'm looking at in my practice. So when you notice that place of, ooh, it's squeezy, that's a place to stop and go, what's going on for me here?
Right.
You know, posting something on Facebook and saying, I want to be involved politically, the awareness practice would be, well, what does that mean? What's my process of participation? What's my process around involvement? So things are funny, and what makes what I say funny, and what makes what I say sarcastic, and am I all right with that? And what goes on for me around it, right?
Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, the thought just came when you said that. I thought, you said sarcastic, and I thought, well, isn't it okay to be sarcastic? I mean, is it wrong to be sarcastic? So
and
I just want, I just.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the direction. And then to notice what wants to know, right?
Notice what?
Process, to notice that that thought came in to you to say, is it all right to be sarcastic? Well, that's the process I want to pay attention to, because what is the belief around sarcasm? What is the belief on being the right person? Why does it matter to me whether this is sarcastic or not? Do I want to be that way? Do I choose to be that way? Is that whatever that's being written on being sarcastic or funny coming from a centered place? Is that a conditioned place? Am I free around it? That's your exploration, right?
Yeah, and everyone, this might sound naive, but everyone will have their own experience. To some people, it's fine to be sarcastic without judgment. To others, it might not be.
Absolutely, and really that's sort of irrelevant when it comes to an awareness practice, because it's really about, now, what's going on for me around it, right?
Whatever. I'm not sure I get. You mean about how I'm feeling, about what feelings come up or emotions it engenders?
Right. I mean, everybody has, I mean, in the highest sense of the word, we say there's no self and other, right?
Right.
So
right.
If you're projecting, if you think someone is okay with sarcasm and someone is not okay with sarcasm, but it's happening for you. So you're bringing awareness to the fact that I think this person is all right with sarcasm and this one isn't.
Uh-huh.
And what do I feel as a consequence of that, right? Because we only come back to what we know. We bring awareness to what we know, and the only thing we're aware of is what's going on for you or for me, right? As in, what's going on for me?
Well, hopefully we can know, because that in itself is a very interesting life experience to even be able to know.
That's such a good point, Bree, right? I mean, all I can do is bring attention to my process. And the knowing we're talking about is not the factual knowing. It's an intuitive sensing.
Yeah.
I can see something. I can see the process. And I think that's the structure that practice provides, right? The ability to deconstruct egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate into beliefs and assumptions and projections and subpersonalities and self-hate and karma and all of that as a way of seeing how the process of suffering is created and maintained. And calibrating to where do I experience this? Where is it coming from?
Yeah. Yeah, hearing all that. Go ahead.
Go ahead. And when you shift the framework from what I want to be is the right person doing the right thing, participating in the right way on the
right
side to, I want to wake up and end suffering.
Mm.
Your context shifts so much from a content focus and being involved in the world to a process focus and being of the world. It doesn't mean you stop participating just because you're doing awareness practice.
for sure.
What you're participating in changes, right? Because your primary goal is to wake up and end suffering. Because when suffering ends in you, it's likely that your participation in the world will always be a contribution. Because it comes from awareness.
That's really lovely. Yeah, when our suffering ends, then we're something about then the impact on others, how it plays out then in the world when our suffering can end at any, even at one point here or there along the journey, so to speak.
Yeah. In every moment that you're here,
yeah,
suffering has ended for you and everyone else, right? And that if your entire focus is being here to come from that centered, conscious, compassionate place, it's the only way you can make a difference. Because otherwise, we're just dueling ego. I take an ego position, and you take an ego position, and ego and egos duel it out. Nothing changes.
I mean, Facebook is a phenomenal landscape of practice. I mean, it's totally there. It's all there. It's just all there. If you just want to get involved on the level of reading, you know, so many responses and replies and watching, you know, what your own projections, it's just all available right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is if you're coming from the perspective of that's a workshop for you, right?
Right.
There's lots of unconsciousness everywhere, wherever we look, in every forum where people are going to give rip or give vent or express themselves, ego's going to be there. But what I hear you saying is that for you, it's a workshop because there's the ability to watch your process as you read these comments, which is the shift we're talking about from, you know, is it about being right and having the right comment, or am I looking at my process as I engage with the world? Because it's really, really important for me to be free, to come from that place that there's nothing wrong, and to be able to be that in my interactions in the world.
There's so much here. I so appreciate this conversation. I so do.
Yeah.
I don't, maybe I'm just not hooked up enough in terms of, but I think it's so interesting, the whole conversation about awareness practices and politics so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I don't know if you read Sherry's blog about that, but in her newsletter, I think, where you know, she talks about how if serving is what we're about, then, you know, being involved in politics is not very far from spiritual practice, because it's always a way by which how is it that I can be the most centered person as I engage in the world? That's really how we're looking at it. Right,
right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Bree.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Bree. And Ashwini, it's politics does seem to bring up a lot of energy in us. And as you said, a great place to bring awareness to.
Well, amen to that one, Michael.
Yes. And Ashwini, we're going to hear from our recording and listening training program, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, I wanted to remind folks that there's a recording app for the iPhone. It's called Practice Recorder. It's a great app for recording and listening, and it's on sale in the iPhone's App Store.
It is a great app. Thanks for the reminder, Michael.
Yes, yes, you're welcome. And we have another caller here. Let me just get the queue organized. Okay, here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Ashwini, this is Mira.
Hi, Mira.
Hey, Mira.
Hi. I am calling to talk about meditation and conditioning.
Okay, two of our favorite subjects.
Yes. So after many years of trying to meditate, I committed at the end of September, and it's been going great. Since then, I've meditated every day. It's no longer a contest. And I'm just flabbergasted that making a commitment works.
Yes, a celebration, one more celebration of a practice success.
That's right. Yeah, and it'll be interesting because whenever I talk about a practice success, there's usually a backlash. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. But but what I've been seeing, so I've been working with your book, and it's hard for me to articulate this. So what I've been seeing is that with counting the breath, and paying attention to that, what I noticed is that what often happens is when I'm paying attention to counting, it's like I'm being breathed by ego. And so there's the anticipation of taking the breath and getting to the bottom and counting, and there's nothing free about it. I often feel like I don't get enough air when that's happening. And what I saw was with the little monk and counting one and one and one, I just saw something different about that. And when I first noticed it 2 days ago, it was like everything opened up. And I had the freedom to not be like bracing and anticipating. But now it's like ego's caught up with me, and and it wasn't quite so pleasant this morning. So I just thought I'd bring that to guidance and see.
Yeah. So there's a way in which you were, first of all, it's a lovely process, right, Mira? Because you made the commitment to meditate. So the first threshold there was to get on the cushion, right? And so that's a huge practice success to be able to sit. Now, while you're sitting, you've noticed this process where it feels like there's a constriction because it almost feels as if there's a thinking about counting the breath that introduces some pressure, some urgency, something that feels constricted in the breathing. And then suddenly you drop into a way to breathe that did not feel like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And something opened up for you. And so then there's the observation of it doesn't feel that way. And so we noticed the comparison, right? It felt easy in one place, and it didn't feel that easy, or it's got, or ego's caught up with me, or, and you can watch the process around it. Because there's a way in which I project, as you keep sitting, a particular way of breathing happened for you. Doesn't mean it wouldn't happen for you again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there's that sense of being watched, though, that I notice in other parts of life. But it's so apparent here.
Yes, exactly. So there's a process that you're familiar with that is happening on the cushion, and what it feels like is ego's breathing, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're being watched by ego, and that feels a certain way in the body, which just says that the attention is really not on the breath. The attention is still in that conditioned process that is telling you how to breathe.
Yeah, and nobody can tell me the difference, right? I'm going to have to experience it. Is that right?
Precisely, and now exactly, and you have experienced it, right? Mm-hmm. You just told me that you did. There was a quality of the breathing that didn't feel that way,
right?
And you, no matter how, I mean, and this is what we always say, right? We've got to give it all that we've got, and know that that very giving it all that we got is standing in the way, because you cannot will yourself into it. You cannot think yourself into it. You cannot do yourself into it, because in all of those cases, what we're employing is the process that we're trying to let go of, right? But the letting go does happen.
Right. Okay. So what this sounds like is just to trust going forward that I'm going to be sitting there every day for half an hour, so things are going to show up.
Yes, well, and you're just going to notice, right? Because it's not like, so there are a couple of things that we practice in practice, in an awareness practice, that we want to practice on the cushion. There's nothing wrong. If you find yourself having a constricted breathing what does the Buddha say? If it's a short breath, it's a short breath. If it's a long breath, it's a long breath. Mm-hmm. The quality that you're bringing to the cushion is there's nothing wrong. In fact, on the cushion, you're going to see everything that's going to come up for you in your life. It's going to be boring. It's going to be terrifying. You're going to fantasize. You're going to, you know, but you're there for it all. If your attention is on awareness, then on the cushion, you're training to be with however it is. You're not training to stop the thoughts or to have this blissed out experience or anything else. What you're training is your ability to see, to expand the awareness and be present to what's going on for you. So you can tell me really, really clearly in glorious detail exactly how that experience feels for you. How is that possible if you're not present on the cushion paying attention?
Right, right. Yeah, and I think it was just going after something. Because I've had, it seems like I've accepted so much, like the the fidgetiness that can show up, and I mean all the different things, and all the things that I would never do if I were sitting in the meditation hall. At the monastery, like, look, this is what I'm doing now. I wouldn't do that there. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, this felt different. And I'm just so glad to have it put back into the context that if there's no difference between breathing and all those other things.
That other things meaning that process of being watched is what's there on the cushion. And so you'll just keep attending to the breath till that falls away.
Yeah,
because you know that can happen, right? Something that shifted for you will shift for you again. And if you're paying close attention, you'll probably be able to tell me what it was, right? Yeah, right now it's something that you read in that book about going back to one that caused something to fall away that became available on the cushion.
Yeah, and it was really paying attention to that over and over again and wondering about it. And and it would just drop in. And there were all sorts of stories that were made up, like, well, how do I know that? I don't really know that that's what it is. But
yes.
And then the other really big question is, when do I count to two? I don't know. But I don't know.
Uh-huh. You mean that while you're on the cushion counting to one, the conversation is about when you're going to count to two. The attention is moving there.
Sometimes it does. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it does. That's beautiful. That's so matter of fact, right? Sometimes it does. I'm sitting here. I haven't even finished getting to one yet. And I watch the conversation and the thought about two show up, mm-hmm. not knowing when two is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. That yeah. too, right? That too is part of my meditation.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, thank you so much. I really
All right.
appreciate
Can't
this.
Wait to hear the next bulletin, Mira.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mira. And it's fun to explore meditation in detail like that, Ashwini.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, wow. Hi, this is Justin. Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini.
Hi, Justin.
Hey, Justin.
What I wanted to talk about, yeah, I also got your book on the Daily Recollection, and it's been really wonderful just to go through it because, you know, just getting a different view of something that, you know, we see or recite every day is so good. The one area I did want to just maybe get a little bit more understanding, or maybe your thoughts, just on the Heart Sutra, where we talk about form is not different from emptiness and emptiness is not different from form. Is that is that kind of pointing towards, and I know you've talked about it in the past, where, you know, it's the interface or where things change, and maybe is it just pointing towards, you know, there being a oneness and seeing through the distinctions that conditioning would make between things? Is that what is... I don't know if that kind of makes sense, but just maybe just...
So.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it certainly sounds like your intuition... There's an intuitive sense for you about what it is about, right? That form is not different from emptiness and emptiness is different from form. And what I heard you say there is it's those places where everything is the same thing. Right?
Yeah.
She often talks about if the Buddha nature of everybody was pink, all you would see was pink.
Okay.
So it's what you're saying, that essentially all the intelligence that animates us animates all. Sometimes you can see it in form and sometimes you can see it not in form, I guess, if you want to call that emptiness. But that, as your intuition is saying, it's the interface between something goes from one form to another or from here to that, but the essential oneness of it all is what we acknowledge. That's the blessed knowledge, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just because, you know, I mean, especially, you know, we put words to things like emptiness and, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, you know, conditioning can get kind of hold of that and try and, you know, think its way through it in terms of, but yeah,
what is
no,
it?
Thank you. That, yeah, well, what is well, that?
Well, and I think that really is the beauty of this practice, right? Because a word like emptiness, what conditioned mind would want to do is, well, what's that, right? I need to get a definition. I need to ask about it. But what the way you are approaching it is, actually, that I recognize that as a familiar process of trying to figure it out. What I want is to have my experience of what may be pointed to by this word. And when I have that experience, I get to talk about it and see if it's anyone else's experience, right? So we tend to ask the question because that's a conditioned process that wants an answer. But what we get trained in this practice is to become aware that that's the process that's going on. And if I drop that process, what is my experience of what's being pointed to? And so often we do know, right, Justin?
Yes. Yes. I do. I've had that experience.
Yes.
I've had it. Exactly. But conditioning would tell me that I haven't, and that's the crazy thing, and that I have to figure it out, and it's out there. It's not in here that I'm, you know, I've seen. So, yes, thank you for that reminder,
And that conditioning is I mean, we say this all the time, right? It's not real. And yet, you know, is it form or is it emptiness? what is emptiness? I mean, here I am listening to something that's not real. And it's the ability to see that it's not real, to see what it does, and then to redirect to something else, and then to have that giggle of delight of, you know what, I just saw through this. And then the whole thing makes sense, and there are no words to express why you know what you know.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Ashwini. I appreciate you. I appreciate this chatting, and it's great. Yeah, it's great just to be participating. Thank you very much, and thank you, Sangha. Thank you for everybody.
Have a good evening. You too.
Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Justin. And Ashwini, now I see why it's a silent practice, because we can never find the words to describe it.
We all just have to use words to point to things that we need, we experience.
Yes, precisely. And we have another caller here. Next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Anna from Seattle.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Hi. I think I wanted to talk about just something with my mom. About my mom. I talked to her, say 1 week ago, and I thought, wow, it's really sincere and everything, and, you know, I opened my heart a little bit, and it was a really wonderful conversation. And then I talked to her today, and it was not so sincere, and I felt like I had to close my heart again. And I'm just realizing it has been like that, like, always.
So when you say it's sincere, Anna, are you talking about how you are or how you project she is?
Project how she is.
Project how she is. And so you're watching a process where, when the projection is that she's sincere, there's a way in which you can open your heart, would you say, be vulnerable, and that and that when you experience that that's not what's coming back at you, there's a tendency to want to protect yourself.
Yeah, it's almost not like what's coming back to me. It's more like it's being like, something is like being tried to pull. It's almost like poking or doing something so that she gets a reaction from me that she has, that overpowers me in a way, in an emotional way.
So there's a way in which it's a sort of push pull, like an open close, and there's a way in which she reacts to you that feels hard for you.
So I just don't know. Is there any like suggestion on, because I know every moment is new, and you know what we say, like every thing. Like, I'm new every moment. She is new every moment. But it just doesn't seem.
So a couple of things, right, Anna?
I don't keep my heart home.
So, you know, there's many things, right? There's clearly someone who goes through whatever emotions she goes through when she experiences that, right? So you really want to make sure she has the ability to say what's going on for her. And for that to be heard and validated and listened to and accepted and brought into loving acceptance. So to do the two-handed recording, perhaps with the person who experiences that emotional reaction and feels vulnerable and feels whatever she feels when her mother is that way, right? So that's sort of perhaps the first thing to do, which is to acknowledge that there is an emotional reaction and there's something going on for you that needs to be brought into conscious awareness. Have you done a two-handed recording with her?
About that, I'm pretty sure I must have, but no, I can't remember.
Yeah, it's time too, right? Every time you have a good experience, do the recording. Every time you don't have a good experience, do the recording. Every time you have a conversation with your mom, it seems like there's something there that gets triggered, right? And so you want to know what that is, and you want to bring that into conscious awareness so that it doesn't stay in you and cause you to suffer and cause you to be jerked around in this interaction with the other person. Because we sometimes say this in this way, right? If my conditioning gets triggered by someone else's conditioning, I'm still getting triggered by my conditioning, right? And the only place I can make a difference is the conditioning in me. So you want to get really, really clear about what goes on for you so that what's going on for anyone else doesn't trigger suffering in you. And the only way you can do that is to get really clear as to what's triggering you and to be able to bring that into unconditional acceptance so that it can be healed and you don't get triggered by that again. Then you're free.
Well, it would be so simple if she always was the same way like that, you know, because I, then, you know,
yes,
that is so true, right,
Anna?
I choose to be in a relationship.
Yes, but, precisely. That's what we think, that if the other person were just this way, then I would be all right. And that is a sort of a false premise because it allows us to stay in my well-being is dependent on the other person. And that's a very fragile place because everybody out there, you have no control over. Everyone's being conditioned. Everyone's going to get identified and then they're going to disidentify. And so when you're interacting with someone, you have no idea whether, you know, you're going to encounter their ego or their authenticity. And if how you are is based on how they are, then it's a very fragile existence, right? Very unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is if someone is nice, then something happens in you. If someone is not nice, something happens in you. Regardless, something happens in you. And that's the only place that you can actually come to some level of resolution is what happens for you. Because the most secure place to be is no matter what happens out there, I'm in touch with who I want to be in every moment, and that's the center. And I want to come from love, and I don't want to get triggered, right? That's what we're doing in this practice. How do I resolve what's going on for me so I don't get triggered by someone else, and my well-being is not conditional?
Oh, I'm just seeing how perfect this is because. When my mom, you know, says something and I don't care, you know, whether I don't talk for like half a minute, so I can actually like turn inward and, you know, I don't have to, if I was in a work situation, I would have to respond quicker, you know? So this is a perfect practice opportunity where when she can say something and I don't need to be threatened or respond right away. I can just turn
take
inward
minute.
And take
yeah.
a minute and
yeah.
be like, Anna,
yeah.
what?
Yeah.
Why aren't you talking?
Yes.
And I cannot care. That's true. It's
yes.
perfect.
Well, you cannot take it personally, right? That's what you're saying. There, you don't have to take it personally And we've got so many techniques we can use to do that, right? So one of my favorite techniques when I'm talking to somebody who can trigger me is whatever they say, I internally reflect what they said. I don't say it out loud, but I just repeat in my head what they said so that it prevents me from going to a reactive place, right? If they're the kind of person who wants to, you know, engage and doesn't like pauses, you can reflect out loud. So what I heard you say is, I bet you're a good reflector. And the reason to do that, the reason to reflect, is to have the attention be fully here rather than going to what triggers me and cause an ego take over, and I respond from an ego place. I react from an ego place, right? Or I get hurt and I withdraw, or whatever it is that the conditioning causes me to do, I don't have to indulge. Because as you said, you can take a breath and turn inwards and take a couple of breaths before you before you say something, or reflect what she says, or reflect in your head, or whatever else. And it becomes a practice of not taking it personally.
I'm glad all this is recorded, because I was thinking about my next question the whole time.
say that again, Anna.
I'm glad all of this is recorded, because I was thinking about the one question I wanted to ask. So, if she asks a question, for example, so it's kind of interesting. The guys, like, I only hear their names like once, and then so how do I reflect that?
You wanna. You're very curious about why you just hear the name of those guys only once. I'm interested in that too, Mom.
Well, it's not even true, but yeah, that's just
So you don't have to say it's not true. You don't have to engage. You can just say, I hear you saying that you just hear their names once. Maybe I just only mention it once.
Okay, yeah. So I guess I can ask a question. I can reflect a question like that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to answer a question at all if you don't want. I mean, it's mastery, right? That the communication book actually has so many tools about how to be in difficult interactions, where it's a complete workshop. You get clear through recording and listening about what goes on for you with your mom, and you use every conversation as a workshop to practice your reflective listening skills, your strategic reflection. You reflect the last three words. You don't have to answer a question. Every single conversation, you can practice a particular technique. And you just facilitate. You facilitate.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Anna. You take care. And let us know how it goes, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. And Ashwini, what dropped in during that conversation is that we have an extraordinary practice. And I have this, and I have the teachings available to me through this great group of people, through this sangha. And it's just extraordinary. And there's more teachings than I can even consume. And it's just such an extraordinary gift. And I'm just kind of bowled over by how amazing it is.
Me too, Michael. And we always say this, right? How lucky we all are.
Yes, how lucky we all are. So true. Thank you, Ashwini. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for being here every Tuesday.
My pleasure. Okay, good night.
Good night.